Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today I have a great guest on. His name is Michael Cremo. And we're going to be talking about some eye-opening information that they keep trying to hide as far as archaeology goes. So, Michael, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you, Nancy, and all your listeners.
You know, it's really great to have you on the show, Michael, because there's a lot of actually, you know, new and very great, you know, kinds of information coming in about man, you know, their development, DNA, and all that good stuff. So a lot of times people look at it like, well, this isn't anything, and they kind of debunk it. So before we start to talk about that, let's talk a little bit who Michael is and how you started to be so interested in finding out basically the truth.
Well, the particular areas of truth that I've been looking into, Nancy, have to do with the origin and antiquity of the human species. And these are kind of important questions. They may seem a little abstract, like at first glance, just something for a few scientists and philosophers to talk about in their ivory towers, but really, the answers to the questions, who are we, where did we come from, influence the lives of all of us, because the goals that we set for ourselves individually and collectively are to a large extent determined by the answers that we give to these fundamental questions. Who am I? Where did I come from? For example, if I think I'm an American man, well, that's how I behave. So identity is very important. And the problem is the answers to these fundamental questions have been dictated to most people by scientists who have a government-enforced monopoly in the education system for their ideas. And the ideas that they're promoting these days are the Darwinian evolutionary ideas, which tell us, well, we're just machines made of molecules. That's what we are. We're evolved apes. The first human beings like us only came into existence on this planet 100 or 200,000 years ago. Before that, there were no human beings like us on this planet. There were simply more primitive ape-like human ancestors. And that's what I learned when I was in school. That's what I learned from my teachers in high school and university. But I had an advantage when I was growing up in being born in a military family. My father was an Air Force intelligence officer. And that meant a couple of things. First of all, it meant that our family was moving from place to place in the United States and around the world every 3 or 4 years. And that meant that as a child, I was being exposed to different worldviews, different outlooks. I learned there is more than one way to look at the world. You know, different people in different parts of the world have their different ideas. And that meant that as I was growing older, you know, I had to develop my own worldview. So I began constructing it using elements I'd gotten from the exposure I'd had to different cultures, different peoples, you know, as our family journeyed from place to place. You know, for example, I spent some of my early years in Hawaii, where there are many different cultures, and I spent some of my early years in Europe, where, again, there are different cultures. So I one of the worldviews I became exposed to was the ancient spiritual tradition of India. And in the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, I encountered stories, histories of human beings on this planet going back millions and millions of years. It was something completely different, you know, from what I heard from my teachers in high school and university. They were all supporters of the Darwinian theory of evolution. But here was another idea, which is not just found in the ancient Sanskrit writings of India. It's also found in the Bible, the idea that God put Adam and Eve on earth in the beginning. He didn't evolve them from apes or monkeys. It's there in the Quran. It's there in Native American Indian traditions. It's there in most of the world's great wisdom traditions. You know, the idea that humans have been on earth right from the very beginning for millions and millions of years. So as I thought about it, I thought, well, is that just mythology? Is it fiction? Or is there some real truth to it, which would mean what I'd been told by, you know, my teachers in high school and university was, well, wrong, really. So I began to do some research. And the first place I looked was in the current textbooks of archaeology and anthropology and history, and there I didn't see any evidence that humans have existed on Earth for millions and millions of years. There, I found only the evidence that supports the current Darwinian evolutionary theory, you know, that human beings evolved from apes fairly recently. So I decided not to stop there. I decided to look into the original scientific reports, not the textbooks, but the original scientific reports of archaeologists, geologists, paleontologists, and other scientists who are digging into the earth. And I wanted to see what they were reporting that they were finding. So when I started doing that, I found many reports of scientists finding human bones, human artifacts, human footprints, many millions of years old. So I collected all those reports together, and I published them in a book called Forbidden Archaeology. And I called it Forbidden Archaeology because it's archaeology beyond the textbooks. Mm-hmm. It's the archaeology that doesn't get past what I call the knowledge filter that operates in the world of science. So then, after that book came out, people started asking me a question after they read the book. You know, they read the book, they saw all this evidence that contradicted the current theories of human origins. So they began asking me, well, if you don't think we evolved from the apes, where do you think we came from? What's your alternative idea? So to answer that question, I wrote another book called Human Devolution, a Vedic Alternative to Darwin's Theory. And in that book, I proposed, okay, before we even ask this question, where did human beings come from, we should first of all ask the question, what is a human being? And today, you know, many scientists are going to say a human being is just a machine made out of molecules. That's what we are. We're purely material beings. However, when I looked at all the evidence that comes to us from the world of science, I could see that there's evidence we're something more than just machines made of matter. There is a subtle mind element with some very unusual paranormal powers like remote viewing and telekinesis, mind over matter. There's also evidence for a conscious self that can exist apart from the brain, apart from the body. You know, there's all kinds of scientific evidence for that. So my research, which originally started with stones and bones, gradually led me into researching the paranormal, the metaphysical, things like that. So that's how I got to where I am today. That's at least in a summary way.
Michael, why do you think it is so important for people to really find out the truth. I mean, we are, and I'm sure you know this, constantly lied to, constantly filtered things, constantly not told the truth. So, you know, in the typical person, why is it so important for that typical person to really learn the truth about, you know, all the filters that have been put in place?
Well, let's look at it in a very practical way. If we are going to act in our own best self-interest and in the interest of those that we love, we should know who we really are and what our situation in this world really is. If we don't know who we really are and we don't know where we are and what's really going on around us, well, we're not going to be able to act in our own self-interest because we don't know what our real self is and we don't know what our real situation is. Then we're going to be acting in ways that are not good for ourselves, not good for those we love. For example, we may go out in the street, and if we see a person that doesn't appear to have a good grasp of who he is and what he's doing, if he's just wandering around and acting in a crazy way like he doesn't know who he is or where he is, we'll say that person is in trouble. We'll say that person needs help. That person has got to get some real knowledge of what the truth about himself and his situation is. So it's the same with all of us. We may even want to keep our distance from such a person because we think, well, if he doesn't really understand his situation and who he really is, he may harm himself. You know, he may harm others. So we're all in a situation like that. If we don't have the proper understanding of who we really are and what our real situation is in this world, then we're not going to be able to act in our own best self-interest and for the welfare of those we love. So that's why I think it's important to make sure we have a proper understanding of what the real truth is about these things. Now, another factor to consider is if you can dictate to someone their concept of self and their idea of where they are, you can control people in that way. If you can control who they think they are and where they think they are, then they'll do everything. If they accept what you say about who they are and where they are, then they'll naturally act according to those understandings. So that's how society today is controlled. There are forces who now have a monopoly in the public tax-supported school systems, and they're able to dictate to people the answers to these very important questions. They're able to tell them, you're an evolved ape. That's what you are. You are a machine made of molecules. That's what you are. You know, there isn't anything higher than that. And therefore, people tend to become very materialistic. If you give people a very materialistic sense of identity and place in the world, they will tend to set very materialistic goals for themselves. And we're told not only are we just machines made of molecules, machines made of matter, we are machines made of matter. We are machines made of molecules in competition with each other for survival. And I think this is one of the roots of the intense levels of conflict, you know, that we see in the world around us. Through the education systems all over the world, you know, people are being indoctrinated in this idea that they are just evolved apes. They are machines made of matter in competition with each other for survival. So I think the result is first of all, were overproducing and overconsuming at a rate that the earth cannot sustain. We're poisoning the land, poisoning the water, poisoning the air. We're deforesting the land. We're driving species into extinction. We're creating a mess. And I believe this mentality is also at the root of the world's financial crisis today, because people believe, yes, I'm in competition with each other for financial survival and dominance. Well, some people take unfair advantage of the financial system, like, you know, some bankers and financiers. That's the root of our current world financial crisis. Some people tried to game the system, cheat the system, and it collapsed, and now people are having to pay for it. If we had a proper understanding of who we are and where we really are, then we would see that we are not just machines made of matter. We're beings of pure consciousness. You know, that's one of the points that I try to make in my book, Human Devolution. We didn't evolve up from matter, as most scientists now say. Rather, we're beings of pure consciousness. We've devolved or come down from a level of pure consciousness, and we're meant to return there. If we had that sense of identity, we'd understand, okay, we're all beings of pure consciousness. We're all coming from the same source. We're all related. Yes, we have some material needs, but we should try to satisfy them in the most simple, natural, and efficient way possible, cooperatively, not in competition with each other for survival, and trying to do everything that we can to exploit the system for ourselves at the expense of others. That is a prescription for, well, what we've got in the world today. So I think it, as I said, at first glance, some of these questions may seem like just some abstract things for a few philosophers and scientists to talk about. But really, you know, the answers to these fundamental questions, who am I, where did I come from, what is this universe, these are questions that affect the lives of each and every one of us. If we have the right answers, well, we would be living in a world that is more harmonious, peaceful, just. If we continue to live by the wrong answers, well, we already see the direction we're going in, and it's just going to get worse.
Yeah, a lot of people are very concerned with 2012. And, you know, I have told people for a very long time, 2012 is not what you should be concerned about. It's before that and yet after that. But, you know, in your book, excuse me, The Forbidden Archaeologist, you talk about the Rockefellers. Could you go into a little detail about them and why they were involved with, you know, findings of, you know, where we came from?
Well, as I was saying, if you can dictate to people the answers to these questions, who am I and where did I come from, you can pretty much control them. If you answer those questions and get people to accept those answers in a very materialistic way, then they will think that to produce and consume more and more material things is the main purpose of human life. And that process of overproducing and overconsuming much more than we really need generates excess wealth. And that excess wealth flows into the pockets of certain people who, like the Rockefellers and others, benefit from that excess economic activity that flows into their pockets, into their foundations, into their corporations. So one reason why the Rockefeller Foundation was promoting these ideas that we evolved from apes that were just machines made of molecules, is that it was in their interest to do so. So the particular case, you know, that I talk about in this latest book of mine, The Forbidden Archaeologist, took place in China early in the 20th century. The Rockefeller Foundation was funding research, archaeological research in China. There was a scientist there, Dr. Davidson Black, who was doing research at a place called Shukutin in China, and he was trying to find some missing link to try to prove the theory that we evolved from apes and monkeys. And the Rockefeller Foundation was funding his research. And, you know, I dug into the history of this in quite some detail. And, you know, I saw that at that time, the Rockefeller Foundation was funding lots of different kinds of research, research in archaeology, research in biology, research in medicine, research in psychiatry. And I looked into it, and the president of the Rockefeller Foundation at that time, in the 1920s and 30s, said, well, it may look like we're just funding all this different research in different areas, but really it's actually just one research program. What we're trying to do is understand human nature so that we can control it, You know, if we can understand these questions about who are we, where did we come from, if we can define them in a very materialistic way, we'll be able to control human society in a way that's beneficial for us. So what the particular discovery that this Davidson Black made was something called Beijing Man, which was interpreted. It was just some, I mean, I believe that, you know, there were ape men who existed in the past, just like I believe there are ape men who are existing at present. People call them by different names, Sasquatch, Bigfoot, Yeti, Abominable Snowman, whatever. I believe they exist, but we didn't come from them. We just coexist with them. So just like we're coexisting with them now, we coexisted with them in the past. We didn't. They're just another type of species. Not something that we evolved from, but something that we coexisted with. But the Rockefeller Foundation was interested in trying to prove this theory of evolution because the theory of evolution kind of removes God and the soul from our picture of who we are and where we are, and it results in a very materialistic worldview. There's a famous English evolution scientist named Richard Dawkins, and he wrote, and he said, we are survival machines. We are robot vehicles blindly programmed to preserve the selfish molecules of we know as genes. So that's the picture of reality that we get, that we're machines made of matter in competition with each other for economic, political, social, religious survival. And it leads to this mentality. It leads to overproduction, overconsumption. It leads to the generation of huge amounts of wealth that are directed into the pockets of certain people, certain interests in society. It generates conflict on all levels of human society. It generates environmental devastation. Now, some people profit from all of this devastation and destruction and degradation of the human spirit, but and therefore they encourage the ideas that lead to this, like this Darwinian theory of evolution, for example. So even today, you know, the Darwinian theory of evolution has a government-enforced monopoly in the education systems, which I think is unfortunate.
It's very unfortunate. See, and I was talking to you just briefly before we actually started the interview, and I told you that I actually came to New Mexico to find land, find funding, build a school, and open it. It's called the School of Now, which is actually a school that will never be outdated, and it's a school of truth. In other words, the textbooks that everybody is, you know, so caught up in and taught by and from probably will not be used in this school because I don't believe the stories that are there. I've never believed the stories are there since I've been a child. And so it's very, very important that I believe that these children who are here now and are going to be coming in know the truth. And a lot of them inside themselves already know the truth, but then they're being made to fit into this school system as it be, and they are not making it. So the whole idea of the School of Now is to truly open up the truth, like what you're trying to do, to get people to understand that we have been fed a bunch of, we could call it hype, we could call it bull, we could call it just plain out like lies. But the adults of today are very lazy with trying to change their minds. So in my opinion, Michael, starting with the children that are here now and helping them with the truth and for the truth and be the truth makes a big difference with what our evolution will actually turn out to be as we come crashing into the higher consciousness that we are all trying to wake up to. So would you maybe agree with that as, you know, as a good thing for the children that are here now?
Yes, I think it is good. You know, if we look at the whole range of education policy, I think we see basically two things. There's a public education system, which is funded by the tax money coming from all the people. And then there are also private schools. And I believe that in private schools that are funded with private money, people should be able to teach whatever they like. I mean, assuming it's nothing that's harming people or anything
right.
like that. But people should be able to feel free to teach their own set, own values and own truths as they see it fit. You know, for example, say if there were some people who believe in Darwinian evolution. They honestly believe that. Well, I think they should be able to organize their private school among people who believe that, and you know, they could teach that. Or I could open my private school. I haven't done that like you have, but you know, it's theoretically possible. You know, where I would teach, well, my ideas about what the truth is. And I think that's really good. That's one of the advantages of a free society is that people can form their own schools and educate people, children, according to the values that their parents and teachers believe are right for them. The problem comes with the public tax-supported school systems. And I think if you're taking tax money from all the people, then it shouldn't be that one group is able to hijack the whole education system and use it to propagate their idea. And that's what's happened today.
Mm-hmm.
The Darwinian evolution scientists have been able to hijack, although there are scientists who oppose the theory of evolution and are proposing different alternatives like intelligent design, different kinds of creation ideas and things like that. Although there are scientists like that, the scientists who are supporters of the materialistic Darwinian evolutionary idea have been able to hijack the whole public education system. So they're taking the tax money from all the people and using it to indoctrinate them in ideas they may not like and they may not want their children to be educated in. That's the mm-hmm. unfortunate situation. So I think what has to happen in the public tax-supported schools is there should be alternatives to the current Darwinian evolutionary ideas about human origins in the textbooks and in the classrooms. The alternatives should also be there. And then let the students make up their own minds about these things. And as far as private schools are concerned, you know, I think you're doing the right thing. But for the public tax-supported schools, I think they could also be doing the right thing. They could be teaching a diversity of ideas and let the students make up their own minds. I think that's the best thing for the public tax-supported school system that's taking tax money from all the people.
Yeah, and I agree. Mine's private. When it's finished, it'll be private. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, so and I think that's one of the great things about a free society is, now I wouldn't think that, I mean, because there is a diversity of opinion in society about these things, and I respect, you know, the ability of each person to make up their own minds about these things. If somebody honestly believes the Darwinian theory of evolution is the way to go, all right, I'll respect that. But what I don't think they have a right to do is hijack the whole public education system and use it to just indoctrinate everybody in their idea only. That I disagree with. I would say they would have a right to set up their own private schools, just teach Darwinian evolution to people who want it and for people who are willing to give money for it. But, you know, if we're talking about the public tax-supported schools, I think they should represent the diversity of opinion that's there in society. Like you and I are part of society. We have our opinions about these things that are different from what, you know, the mainstream orthodox scientists are telling us. So I think that diversity of opinion should be represented in the public tax-supported schools. And in addition, we should have the right to set up our own schools, which you're doing, and I applaud you for.
Yeah, it's been a little test, you know, a little testy sometimes, but it's okay. Now, Michael, who really invented archaeology? Where did it come from?
Well, a lot of people today think it was something that Western scientists invented, you know, within the past few hundred years. And what I found in my research as I went around the world is I could see that actually the traditional people, you know, the people that lived in various parts of the world, have lived there for thousands of years, have had their own archaeology, their own understanding of the past. And I mean, what happened in over the past 100 or 200 years is that the materialistic scientists centered, you know, mostly in the West, they tried to use their science, their archaeology, to discredit the understandings that traditional people had of their own origins and cultures. And, you know, they did it to Native American people, they did it to Australian Aboriginal people, they did it to, well, to traditional Christian people. I mean, most people used to have the idea that God created Adam and Eve in the beginning, and then, you know, these scientists gradually have pushed that idea out of the education system, out of the world of science. And so they've done this all over the world. But what I found is that people in the various parts of the world, they've had their own archaeologies. They've had their own wisdom traditions. For example, I found that especially in India, Now, generally they say in the textbooks that archaeology began in India when the Europeans came there. Excuse me. came there in the 18th century, 19th century, and started digging around and finding things. But I found in my research that the people in that part of the world had their own archaeological traditions.
When it comes to different parts of the world, in your book you talk about a place in South Africa that's called the Cradle of Lies. Can you explain that a little bit, please, to the listeners?
Well, as I'm doing my research and presenting my work, I do travel a lot to different countries. You know, my books are now translated into about 20 languages, so I get invitations to speak in a lot of countries. I speak at universities and scientific conferences and alternative science conferences. So once I was invited to South Africa, the country of South Africa, to give some lectures there at universities. And during my free time between lectures, I thought I should visit some of the archaeological sites in South Africa. So one of the places that I visited was called Sterkfontein, and it's near the capital, Pretoria, and the largest city, Johannesburg, but it's out in the countryside, and there are caves there. They're limestone caves. And in the 1940s, some archaeologists discovered the bones of some ape man at these caves, the Sterkfontein caves. And they were the bones of an ape man called Australopithecus, which stood about 3 feet tall and was very ape-like in the way that its body was constructed. It looked like it was adapted for swinging by its arms and trees and things like that. But still, they thought it was a human ancestor. According to the Darwinian theory of evolution, we evolved from apes, so they thought this was some missing link who existed about 3 million years ago. So they started calling this place the Cradle of Humanity. In other words, it's the birthplace of the human species. And actually, it's now a United Nations World Heritage Site, and millions of tourists go there every year, and it's sort of like a religious pilgrimage in a sense that they think, oh, this is the place where our ancestors first came from, our ape man ancestors now here in South Africa. And it's promoted like that, and they call it the Cradle of Humanity. But I visited that place, and actually, before you're allowed to enter the Sterkfontein caves to see the place where these bones of this so-called missing link were discovered, you have to go through a museum. You must. You're taken through this museum where you're kind of indoctrinated into the theory of evolution. And when you go, the first thing when you go in the museum is that you see a sign that says, "Discover yourself." Now, that's not so bad. I think we should all want to discover ourselves, who we are, where we came from. As I explained in the beginning, those are fundamental questions that we all have to answer for ourselves. But the answers that they give in that museum are very, very materialistic. You see this big sign with a quotation from Richard Dawkins that says, "We are survival machines, robot vehicles, blindly programmed to preserve the selfish molecules known as genes." In other words, they give a very materialistic concept of the self. And then further, we're taught, well, we are just evolved apes. And they show you, here's this little ape man. It gets a little bit bigger, and finally it turns into a human being. So you're indoctrinated in that idea. So after going through this indoctrination in the museum, then you're kind of allowed to go on a little pilgrimage down into the caves to see the place where your so-called ancestor existed 3 million years ago, some little ape man. And therefore, as I said, they call this place the cradle of humanity, and it's advertised like that. But I prefer to call it a cradle of lies, because if you actually look at all the archaeological evidence, you'll see there's evidence showing that human beings like us existed millions of years ago at the very same time as this so-called ancestor of ours, ape man ancestor of ours, existed. This ape man that was discovered, the fossil bones of the ape man that were discovered at Sterkfontein are about 3 million years old. But elsewhere in Africa, at a place called Laetoli in the country of Tanzania, Mary Leakey discovered dozens of footprints, and she found them in 1979, and in her original report she said they're exactly like modern human footprints, and they're found in layers of rock 3,700,000 years old, so actually they're even a little bit older than the fossils of our so-called ancestor found at Sterkfontein. So you have fully human footprints, being found over 3 million years old, showing that humans like us were actually present in Africa at the same time, or even a little bit before, the so-called human ancestor, ape man, at Sterkfontein caves. And there's also skeletal evidence. For example, the Italian geologist Giuseppe Ragazzoni found fully human skeletons in layers of rock 3 or 4 million years old at a place called Castagnetolo in northern Italy. So there are just dozens of discoveries like that from all over the world showing that humans like us were already existing at the very same time as our so-called ape man ancestor at the Sterkfontein caves. So that's why I call it the cradle of lies, not the cradle of humanity.
Mm-hmm. How do, and this is going to be a good one because a lot of people are kind of curious about this, how do extraterrestrials fit in with the discoveries that are going on?
Well, that's interesting. Recently, I've been appearing in a series called Ancient Aliens that's been showing on the History Channel, which deals with this topic. I accept the existence of extraterrestrials. I don't think we're alone in the universe, but what I might mean by an extraterrestrial and what some other researchers might mean by an extraterrestrial are two different things. Some researchers would say that extraterrestrials are only of one kind. They're just flesh and blood creatures like us who just happen to have some more advanced space technology by which they came to this planet in the past. When people saw them, they treated them like gods, and that's the origin of religion. So I don't accept that idea. By extraterrestrial, I mean a whole range of beings who are not from this Earth. I think, yes, there are some flesh and blood kinds of extraterrestrials who made use of, you know, space technology, maybe a little bit more advanced than ours. I think that's one kind of extraterrestrial. But I think we're part of a whole cosmic hierarchy of beings. We live in a multi-level, multi-dimensional universe, and there are different sorts of beings who exist at the different levels. So one type of being that exists is, well, beings pretty much like us. You could say flesh and blood extraterrestrials. But beyond that, I think there are extraterrestrials with more subtle anatomies, and, you know, people may call them by different names, astral beings, angels, jinn, gods, goddesses. So I think there's another type of extraterrestrial that exists on some higher, more subtle level of the cosmos. And beyond that, I think they're purely spiritual extraterrestrial beings. Who exist on some higher level of reality, and you could call them spiritual beings, God with a capital G. And so I think there are all kinds of extraterrestrials who have visited the Earth in ancient times. Some of them making use of flying machines, some just appearing like angels or gods or goddesses or jinn, some manifestations of God, like in the Bible, there are descriptions of descents of God into this world. The ancient Sanskrit writings of India have the concept of avatars. There was a film called Avatar, mm-hmm. out a couple years ago that involved, well, you know, there was this human whose mind or consciousness was projected down onto another planet, you know, in some other solar system, and then he was functioning in a body down on that other planet where really he was existing, you know, somewhere else. So I think that does happen. Sometimes these higher beings, they project themselves down into our level of reality, and that's actually what the Sanskrit word avatar means. It means one who comes down from some higher level. So I think there are all kinds of extraterrestrial beings. There are spiritual extraterrestrial beings. There are subtle, material extraterrestrial beings. There are gross material extraterrestrial beings. Some of them make use of spacecraft made of metal. Some make use what we might call mine ships, you know, vehicles made of more subtle elements. So I consider even ourselves, I think we're all extraterrestrials in this sense that the bodies that we have, our material bodies, are vehicles for our conscious selves. And those conscious selves ultimately come from some higher level of reality. I call it a level of pure consciousness. So that consciousness is without birth or death, but the consciousness can be put into a vehicle that does have a beginning and an end. And I think that's the situation that we're in now on this level of reality. The conscious self, you could call it the soul if you want to use religious terminology, but I prefer the conscious self. The conscious self, which has no beginning, has no end, is now functioning in vehicles on this level of reality. Just like as human beings were normally meant to live on the land, but if we want to live under the water in an alien element, then we need a vehicle that will allow us to function in the water. We need a submarine or a diving suit. So that is what our material bodies are. Normally, we're meant to function on the level of pure consciousness. If we leave that level and come to the world of matter, then we need vehicles that will allow us to function here. Just like if we want to live under the water, we need a submarine or a diving suit. So in that sense, we're all extraterrestrials. We've all come from some higher level of reality, and now we're down here. Now, to remind us of that, sometimes beings do come from other levels of reality. We can call them extraterrestrials, and they may try to remind us that, well, this is not our real home. We're originally from some higher place to which we're meant to return.
Yeah, which, and I tend to agree with that. We're almost out of time. So before we get really out of time, could you please give out your website, sites, and your books, and where they can locate them at?
Okay. My most recent book is The Forbidden Archaeologist. It's made up of columns that I wrote for Atlantis Rising magazine. So there are about 49 of these columns. They're gathered together in that book, and it's a good way for people who aren't so familiar with my work to get a good bite-sized, easy-to-read introduction to it. And then if they're interested, they could go further into some of my classic works like Forbidden Archaeology, Human Devolution, and all of these things can be found on my personal website, mcremo.com, mcremo.com. My travel schedule and my interview schedule can also be found on that website. So I think that would be a good way for people to familiarize themselves with my work. Visit that website, mcremo.com. And then there are also websites dedicated to each specific book. But links can be found on my personal website, mcremo.com. But there are websites dedicated to each book, humandevolution.com, forbiddenarchaeology.com, forbiddenarchaeologist.com. So there a lot of ways for people to connect with me and with my work.
Okay, because that's really important. I got your book and I read it. I found it very fascinating. So I know we've got about 1 minute left. So in that 1 minute, I'd like to thank you for taking the time for coming on the show, because it was a pleasure.
Oh, it was really, really great being with you again, Nancy, and with all your listeners from wherever in the world they are tuning in.
Now, you're also going to be at a conference. Why don't you give out that information real quick before we go off air?
Well, this coming Wednesday, I'm starting a 3-week lecture tour of universities in the United States. So if listeners are interested in that, they can look at my schedule link on my mcremo.com webpage. And then at the end of April, I will be speaking at a conference in Port Townsend, Washington. That will be the weekend of April 29th and 30th. And the details of that conference in Port Townsend, Washington, can also be found on my website, mcremo.com, mcremo.com, on the schedule link.
All right. Michael, it was great having you on air. And you keep up all that good work. And when I get this school going, we'll have you come in. You can talk with the students and let them kind of decide what they want to look at. How's that?
That'd really be great, Nancy. Thank you.
You You're very welcome. So thanks for being on the show. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. Have a great week and kind of think about what we talked about, and we'll talk next time. Take care. Bye now.